The question is, well, do we have free will, but Allah's also in charge? So that's a very lengthy discussion, and I'm probably not qualified to have that, but I guess the only thing I will add is that we're not going to change the way we behave. We will act like we have complete control over things to the best of our ability, but recognize that ultimately whatever Allah Ta'ala decides is going to happen is going to happen. Anything beyond that, I will defer to our scholars to answer that question. Yeah, so we should absolutely request that Allah Ta'ala guide us. In fact, one, the ulama mention that if there's one dua that, will always be accepted, like, it's interesting. We know from various teachings that du'as are either accepted readily in the moment, or they're maybe delayed so that there's some better reward given on the Day of Judgment, or Allah Ta'ala replaces it with something else. But the exception to this is the du'a that a person makes for guidance, because you can only get guidance right now. You don't want guidance in the Day of Judgment. It'll be too late. And there's no real replacement for guidance, right? So the du'a for guidance we should all make and hope that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala accepts it. So 100% we should be asking for it. And have confidence that Allah Ta'ala will give it as well. So the question is, if someone's, let's say, professionally doing well, and their deen is being maintained, should they, not try to make changes professionally? There's other factors to consider also. For instance, like if there is to be some growth in a career path and things like that. So that's something that you have to also factor in. You can't just be stuck in the same position. Sometimes, depending on whichever career you're in, sometimes you have to keep climbing ladders, you have to keep making moves because that's the norm of that industry, for instance. So you'd follow the general rules of the industry, which is this is what people do. So if it means that after 7 years people switch things like that, then there's no problem with doing that. But if it's like I'm never content with anything, and every few years I just want something different because I get bored of it, well, that's where the problems sort of arise. Okay, the question is, we talked about the different stations, right? So one is to worship Allah out of a fear for his punishment or potentially wanting reward. The second state being worshiping Allah purely just because we love Allah, because of what he's given us, done for us, etc. And then the highest level is to love Allah, sorry, to worship Allah Ta'ala because he's Allah. Let's remove the whole knowing thing because that'll complicate the picture, because he is Allah. It's important to go through these stages. It's like I said, it's acceptable to be on stage one. The higher stage would be to establish love, and the highest stage would be to really know Allah. And I think that the two ways by which a person can make progress, number one is through abundant dhikr of Allah. There's no replacing the dhikr and remembrance of Allah. The more a person sits, contemplates, does fikr and dhikr of Allah Ta'ala in their heart in particular, the more they'll sort of elevate in their rank. Because these things happen at a metaphysical level sometimes. I can't force myself to love Allah. I can't force myself to, but I can engage my heart in the remembrance of Allah, and inevitably the more I remember Allah Ta'ala, I'll climb in those ranks. The second is to, spend time with people who have reached these states. So, I've certainly spent time in the company of people that are worshiping Allah because they love Allah. I've seen them, I've interacted with them, I've met them. You go to certain parts of the world and that's just the norm almost. Spend time in their company and you too will begin to worship Allah because you love Allah, not because you're afraid of some punishment coming. And then even more so, you see people who worship Allah because he's Allah. And what's interesting about these people is you don't really see it on their outside sometimes. In fact, none of this stuff. This is all internal states. There's nothing external anyway. But sometimes it's the most unusual personalities you'll come across. And it's like, why is Salah so ingrained in this person's life? It's just, I'm a servant of Allah. I don't have a choice. What do you mean? This is exactly what I'm designed to do. So you sort of interact with people. You spend time with these people. And what's present in their heart will penetrate your heart. The transference of these stations happens from heart to heart. It doesn't happen from contemplation. It happens from heart to heart. The Sahaba gave it to the Prophet. The Prophet gave it to the Sahaba. The Sahaba gave it to their students, we gave it to their students, and we still get it from our teachers today. Yeah. The question is, the question is pertaining to when we're making dua to Allah, sometimes we do request things from Allah, and sometimes we'll reference deeds that we performed in the past. It's like a wasila, with hopes that if we mention this, then perhaps Allah Ta'ala will be more likely to accept our dua. And then you mentioned Ashab al-Kahf, when they made dua, they themselves, each of them, had mentioned something they did or abstained from for the sake of Allah, and as a result, Allah Ta'ala gave them something good in this world, which was moving and getting them out of the cave. So how do you sort of reconcile this whole thing? We talked about this in a lot of detail in the last retreat, and I don't mean to, brush off the question, but this idea of where dua, like what the purpose of dua is, how to approach dua, why we're making it, and the adab and expectation that we should have. And so I would encourage anyone that has any questions about dua and whatnot to refer to the audio, because it's available on the website. In the last retreat, we covered this in detail. The chapter was on making dua to Allah. I guess a simple answer to your question is, we're all weak servants. We're weak servants of Allah. And I know we like to talk sometimes, and I myself am talking about these very high, lofty states where I'm never going to ask Allah for anything transitionally or transactionally. But if I'm at a state where I'm still, a simple I need as much help from Allah as I can in terms of dunya, in terms of akhirah. I want what's good for me. I need to reference my deeds. I need to reference the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, good health, all these things. I should continue to make that dua. It's completely permissible and acceptable. Now, if I, by chance, Allah Ta'ala takes me to a much higher state, I automatically will stop asking for those things because I'll see something even greater and beyond that to ask for, right? But at a basal level, if I'm still here, I can't pretend like I'm up here, okay? And so the Ashab al-Kahf, the story of Ashab al-Kahf, it really teaches us that there's many levels and layers to this. You can't just, pretend like we are not, if I don't ask from Allah, who else am I going to ask for? That sort of a thing. So if we're not at that state, you don't have to necessarily fake it to sort of pretend to be like that. The Quran teaches us this. The Sunnah of the Prophet teaches us this as well. No, it makes sense. The question is we see examples, even in the lives of the Sahaba and others, where you sort of still see this general fear of a punishment happening. Am I supposed to abandon that fear and now just be completely engrossed in worshiping Allah because I'm worshiping Allah? Or is it still acceptable for me to maintain some of this? So these are not mutually exclusive states. And for the common person, including ourselves, we're in 2024, we're far removed from the time of the Prophet ﷺ, and we're kind of struggling for basics. I don't think we're at a state where we can just eliminate this fear for the akhirah and eliminate this desire for Jannah. I mean, if you were to ask me, right, I'd be like, if I can succeed at stage one, by all means, I don't want to touch the fire of hell. I just want Jannah. And, on the last 10 days of Ramadan, I'm going to be asking Allah for this in particular, right? And we all should be asking. So the reason to introduce these states isn't because, it was because of what I mentioned earlier in the talk, which is, well, for brief periods of time, we should try to experience the state. That's what it is. If I can reach that permanently, fine, but I don't think most of us in reality are going to be able to do that. But for brief periods of time, especially when we feel very close to Allah, sometimes we just become so in love with Allah that the last thing you're thinking about is punishment. Let me give you an example. You guys all mentioned Umrah and Rawdah and all this stuff. When you're sitting there looking at the Kaaba, we're not thinking about the punishment of Allah at that moment for the most part. We're just, the magnificence of Allah is before us, and we're just like, shell shocked. You don't even know what to say. You're stuck on your feet. So at that moment, all you see is Rabb and Marboob. In that moment, you're not like, oh, there's no like punishment. There's no Jannah, Jahannam. This is it. Right in that moment, that's an experience that we should try to sort of replicate. That's the station that we want to try to have periodically. So does that sort of clarify things? It does not eliminate the need for the first two. I mean, having love for Allah is important, and having fear of Allah Ta'ala is what's going to drive 99% of us toward good. And that's completely acceptable and in this day and age encouraged. Okay, some questions came from the sister side. We live in an increasingly distracted world, especially in the age of social media. I found peace and worship to escape the entrapment of internet distractions. What would you advise about social media use during Ramadan? You're asking the wrong person. I personally don't use social media outside of Ramadan, so I don't think I can make a comment about during Ramadan. Look, if we let's just be practical here, right? Like, Ramadan is an incredible opportunity to connect with Allah Ta'ala, and the more connections I and the more I disconnect from my interactions with others, and in particular following other people and vice versa, just the higher likelihood that I'll be able to connect with Allah Ta'ala on a deeper level. It's simple math, simple logic. There's no complicated calculation for this at all. The more I disconnect from others during the month of Ramadan, the more I'll succeed. My teacher used to say many years ago, and don't take this literally, but he used to say that when the month of Ramadan comes, you should just die, right? In the sense that, like, when you die, you don't, you're not, I mean, you should almost disappear in that way. Because we were talking about retreating and things like that. This is the month to really retreat. Now, go to the masjid, obviously, and participate in those activities. But this is the month to us, for us to connect with Allah. So limiting its use 100% would be advisable. Okay, there's a question about dua. Okay, it's, you know, there's different ways that duas can be answered. I'm aware of that. But I have difficulty reconciling that sometimes our duas are not meant to be answered in this world, meaning they're designed to be answered in the hereafter. It makes sense, fine, intellectually, and I also understand that the purpose of any dhikr is to have Allah's name on our tongue, but this makes me feel defeated and nihilistic, and makes it difficult sometimes to ask for what I want for fear of disappointment. How do I sort of reconcile this? Yeah, and that's human nature. That's the reason that we make du'a. Like, if we were just going to, if this world was such that we didn't have the opportunity to ask from Allah Ta'ala what we thought was best for us, and we were just required to be fully, content with whatever came our way, even if it was hardship and difficulty and trial or tribulation, and I should just sort of accept it, and that we wouldn't learn that from the Prophet ﷺ then. We learn from the Prophet ﷺ to make dua that Allah Ta'ala protect us from difficulties and hardships, because it's human nature to not want to have to experience these things. It's human nature to want a comfortable life. It's human nature to want what's good for me and my children and for my family and for my spouse and for all of these things, my iman, my health. It's human nature to want all of these things. So that's why dua is a tool by which it can be accepted. And of course, Allah Ta'ala accepts many duas, but sometimes those duas are not what's in our best interest. Meaning, we make dua for something, but that may not be what's best for me ultimately. Somebody make dua that I want my loved one to be cured of this terminal illness. And Allah Ta'ala does not accept that dua in that way, and that person passes away from the terminal illness. So we could think, well, what kind of Allah is this? Why didn't he accept it? But we don't know what was best for that person. It's possible that that person lived a longer period of time. Their iman would have flipped. They would have entered a state of kufr, and their akhirah would have been much worse than it was because Allah Ta'ala took them away earlier. Or it's possible that they would have continued to suffer because of their terminal illness. And Allah's like, I want to give this person reward. Why is this person going to suffer for 5 more years? If I take him back and put him in his grave, I can give him his reward from today. Why does he have to continue, or she continue to suffer in this world? That's just, you know, like, we don't need, like, why put them through that? So the problem is, we don't know if what we're asking for is actually what's best for us. Apparently, it appears to be, for instance, get me an A on this exam, but I don't actually know what's best for me. But because Allah knows what's best for me, he may delay it, or he may figure out a different way to pay it back for me. He has what's best in mind for me. There's a question about from the sisters about, like, why did Allah Ta'ala create us in particular? I don't have the answer to that. I'm not qualified to answer that question, and so I'm going to defer that question, inshallah. There was a question, if there's any more questions, sisters, you can pass it up. There's a question here about, when we are doing istighfar, or we're doing tawbah, you know, are we supposed to be thinking about our sins, or is that harmful to us? And the answer to that is, look, we have to rectify the mistakes that we've made of the past. And the only way we're going to be able to do so is by recollecting them. So istighfar is an active process where I'm going to think back about the things that I've made mistakes for, the sins that I've committed, and I'm going to ask Allah to forgive me. Now, once I've asked Allah Ta'ala to forgive me for those sins, I no longer am going to look back at them, because now that's done. And if I think about sins that I had performed in the past, even though I've already done tawbah from them, the scholars mention that this creates darkness in the heart. For many reasons, one of which is I really don't have hope in Allah's mercy. So I shouldn't be thinking about it once I've done istighfar or I've done tawbah and I've repented. I should not go back and reflect upon those sins again. That's done. Now, anything else I may have done in the interim, I need to make amends for. Does that make sense? Yeah, the question of Ibn Istighfar, let's say I can't recollect the sins, can I just make general? Yeah, you can. Even tawbah as well. You could do tawbah for a prior life's worth of mistakes and a plan to never turn back toward anything like that again. Yeah, you could do that as well. You could make a decision that, you know what, I'm going to do istighfar. This is it. From now on, no more disobeying Allah in A, B, C, D, or E way. My life is changing. Many people make this sort of intention, and then you don't have to recollect all of those things. You just move forward. Now, if you've sinned in the sense that you've missed your prayers, fard prayers, you'll have to go back and make those up. If you've missed fasts, you'll still have to go back and make those up. But with the exception of a handful of obligatory acts, you're done. You move forward.